when you have that understanding of your approach to your art and to your work and to your life, quite frankly, you then can apply that to any personal project you make. And I'm running the program at the moment, and I've got a whole bunch of photographers who've figured out their purpose and their why and their style, and they're all, you know, working on their personal projects. And I have three people shooting sports series. But one is coming from...
This photography podcast is brought to you by Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. Here is your today's host, W. Scott Olsen, with another fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast from Frames Magazine. My name is Scott Olsen, and today, folks, today we are talking about something that we do not talk about nearly enough in the Frames community. We're talking about what to do with the photographs, what to do with our vision beyond taking a picture that somehow speaks to our heart and soul, beyond working on large projects. It's how to relate to the business world of photography, to the ad agencies, to the people out there that we want to be our clients, or we want to be someone serving them, how to take our work to the next level. And we're talking to one of the planet's most interesting, really most insightful photo consultants. We're talking with Christina Force. Christina is down in Auckland, or just outside of Auckland, New Zealand, a beautiful city I've had the good fortune to visit a couple of times. And she's British born. She's got a long history. She founded the photo agency, The Collective Force. She founded a production company. She did that for about 17 years and then said she wanted to do something else. Moved down to New Zealand, where she is the founder and chairperson of NZ, New Zealand Agents and Producers Association. Works for the Photographers Mail. My Lord, this guest speaker everywhere you can possibly imagine. And has worked for things like Vivid, for the New York Academy of Film, the IPA Lucy Foundation. She's been a judge there since 2011. The resume just goes on. But what we're talking about here is the ability to share insight and inspiration and an understanding of how to get your work out into the world in a way that is filled with both integrity and success. She asks a question that I think is easy to ask and yet profound for all of us. What if you could get paid to shoot the work you love? Christina, welcome to the podcast. Kia ora. How are things down in New Zealand today?
Kia ora. Thank you, Scott. Wow, what a great introduction. That's a lot to live up to.
It's all true.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been around the industry since I was 17, so Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, you say on your webpage that at the age of 17, you decided you wanted to work in the best ad agency in the world. When I was 17, I wanted to sail around the world, and that didn't happen. How is it that you decided on ad agency, and then you did it? I mean, you know, 2 years later, you're working at one of the best ad agencies in the world. Tell me that origin story.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, I loved art and photography at school. I did have an SLR, and I used to pop up to London and take shots, you know, go up with a friend. I'd even get permission from all my teachers to to actually skip class. I always used to think, well, if you ask, you never know. Uh-huh. So I used to skip class, go up, take photographs in London. We tripped around all the galleries. So I was really lucky to be living within about a 20-minute train ride from London and be exposed to all those amazing galleries when I was quite young. My dad got quite worried about me being interested in art. And he said, you can't make money with art. So he zipped me up to the library, which is what we did in those days, and found this career book on things you can do with art. Basically, I think it was something like that. And it was quite a new book, and it talked about the ad industry. And basically, I was inspired. I thought, this sounds like a really exciting industry to be in. And so I basically just the first thing I did was attempt to get work in my school holidays in ad agencies. Honestly, I had no idea what they were. I just thought it sounded good, just like you thought sailing sounded good.
Were you trying to get work as a photographer, as an editor, as a designer? When you went in, you said, hire me, I'd like to fill in the blank.
Initially, it was art directing.
Okay.
I like the idea of pulling a whole idea together. I loved ideas. So I love the idea of pulling everything together and coming up with sort of campaigns. That's what I thought I wanted to do. And so anyway, I banged on the door of an ad agency. I did my A-levels quite young because I was the youngest in my year at school. Mm-hmm. And so in those school holidays, I actually had myself a place at London College of Printing to study graphic design.
Okay.
But I heard about an ad agency and didn't want to faff around. So I called this ad agency up that I found out about every single day. So this is 17-year-old me. And I would phone every day and I would say to the receptionist, could I please speak to Dave Walker or whatever his name was? And she would say, yes, just hold a moment. Who's calling? And I'd say my name. And then there would be a sort of a silence. And then she would come back and say, I'm so sorry. He's not available. Can I take a message? And this happened every day. I would say, well, this is who I am and I want to do some work experience. And this is what I want to do. And on the fifth day, I just expected, you know, that it went silent, and I'll just transfer you. And this voice came on and he said, I am only picking up this phone because you will not leave me alone. What do you want?
and you said, I want a job.
I want to work. So he said, I'll give you £25. Come and work for a week.
Okay.
So after a week of running around making coffee for the creative department of this little agency, they said, could you stay on? We quite like having you around. So I stayed on for a few, you know, every week. Could you stay on to the end of summer? And at the end of the holidays, when I was due to go to art college, they pulled me in and they said, look, we think you could be really useful, not just for making tea and coffee. We'd love to have a junior here. We'd like to train you up to be an art director and send you to any art college of your choice, day release. Just let us know. And so, yep, sure. I totally thought that was brilliant. And while I was there, I had a good friend there who was working in another department, but she got a job at Saatchi's London. And she happened to phone me one day and told me about a job there, which was actually in the studio, working on design, layouts and so forth. And so I just went up and went for a job interview. Kind of don't think I got it because I didn't quite understand what the job was. It was more art, illustration, layouts. And I remember lying in my bed one night thinking, I'm going to get that job. And I phoned up the guy the next day and he had obviously made a decision not to hire me, but I just said to him, Melvin, I really need to meet with you. And he said, well, I'm really busy. And I said, well, what time do you finish work? And he said, da, da, da. And I said, I'll meet you after work. I'll be there. And he said, well, and I said, see you then. And I turned up and I'm 18 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of tenacity and I turned up and I showed him a completely different folio with all my art. And he just said, I'm so glad I've seen this. You know, you've got the job. So that was I was committed, but I was also willing to sort of push hard. And that was, I arrived in London W1, I got a flat. My dream was to live in London W1 and walk to work every day from my W1 address. I had no idea when I had that dream that Saatchi's was even anywhere near London W1. I didn't even know Saatchi's existed. So it's that complete and utter naivety that you have at that age that somehow just all came together and really kind of influenced the rest of my life because I kind of knew from then on that anything I wanted to achieve, I could.
You say on your website that, you know, one of your first lessons was understanding the power of commitment. Is that really at the bedrock of your success and perhaps anybody's?
I think so. I think it's about self-belief and trusting. Even if you don't have the self-belief, trusting that it can happen, it can work if you believe it will work. And I say this to photographers all the time because when you're a freelancer and you're a creative person, I really, you know, there's so much mindset stuff that comes into that. You're putting yourself out every single day. you're sharing your work with the world. And if it's the work you love doing and it's the work that's close to your heart, then you're sharing a piece of yourself all the time. And it can be really, you know, scary to put that out there. So, and then if you don't hear anything back, there's all this self sort of talk that says, oh, I'm not good enough, I shouldn't be doing this. And I see this all the time with my clients. And at the end of the day, it's knowing and trusting that it's going to work out, but also having a clear idea of what you want that thing to look like so that you can just see the opportunities when they pop up really clearly, but also ignore the stuff that's getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I feel about the mindset side of things.
Okay. Instead of saying, you know, you were going to be a shooter, you were going to be a photographer, you've really had most of your career in some form of mentoring, of consulting, of being a coach. I mean, you were an agent, then you found it, you moved to New Zealand, you founded an agency. And then finally, you know, you stepped away from being an agent into the role of being a folio consultant. What is it about that side, which is very much like being an editor or a curator or anybody else? What about that side of the business really speaks to you? And then we'll turn into the what that side really does. But what about that mentoring side speaks to your mind?
When I was an agent, I used to sit down with my photographers every year and kind of we'd plan out what they'd like to achieve and what they wanted their, you know, clients to look like and the work they were doing to look like so that I could help get them there. And I really loved that part of it, but I felt that they needed extra support with that, which I wasn't always able to give them because my job primarily was getting out there and getting their work out there and, you know, obviously building their folios and marketing and dealing with the jobs as they came in, which, you know, kept me really busy. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I felt I really wanted to do more of was that nurturing, helping photographers reach their goals, keeping them on track a little with that, you know, boosting their confidence, helping them see what work they were making, which was amazing, and when they were being diverted and going off track with work that they thought they should be making rather than the work that was, you know, really honest. So a lot of that, so it came from that experience really of feeling like there was a hole in that area, that there wasn't anyone out there doing that, that I couldn't do enough of it as an agent, and I wanted to clear space to do that for more people. And also as an agent, there were so many photographers that contacted me. I mean, honestly, daily emails, calls from photographers wanting to be repped. And I really, you know, just struggled with the fact that there was so much, you know, need out there for some support for these photographers. And so I just wanted to make space for that. And I really loved it. And I have to say, as a consultant, the way I consult, and there are many consultants who do this, but do it differently to me. I think I come from quite a holistic approach.
Okay.
And therefore, I think that, you know, it's incredibly rewarding, really rewarding, because they get excited again. They realize that it's okay to be who they are. It's okay to show the work they love making. They don't have to become something they're not, as I said earlier, to succeed. And in fact, as an agent, I became very, very aware that the most inspiring work to the people in my world and the advertising world was the work that was honest and was authentic and true to them. So, yeah, that's basically how I ended up consulting.
That to me is the absolute coolest thing about your approach, because it seems to me the intuitive advice would be, okay, if you want to, you know, start taking photographs for brand, whatever, figure out who they are, learn their brand, learn their history, basically reinvent you in terms of them. And you're coming at it saying, no, you know, be true to yourself. And then when they're looking for shooters, when they're looking for people to hire, they're going to respond to the personal side more than something you've made to try and please them. Is that right?
It's absolutely right. And when you think about it, even though advertising is a bit of a dirty word.
It's okay.
The fact is that most of the advertising creatives, designers, even if you look at photo editors, they all have a background of art training. They mm-hmm. all went to art college. And many of them really wanted to be artists, you know, that they all are super creative people who love making things. Many of them are wannabe photographers. Many of them are amazing photographers on the side. You know, many of them are artists, writers, and they've fallen into this profession because it pays well. Mm-hmm. So essentially, they have a really good understanding of what good photography is. And at the end of the day, they are at the front of the journey of a brand. So they're the ones trying to come up with ideas and create work that hasn't been seen before so that the brands they're working on stand out. And if they're looking at photographers' work that they've shot for other brands, or they're looking at pictures of products, they do that all day. That's boring. So they want to be inspired with new ideas, and they want to see that the photographers they're working with are passionate and care, because they want that kind of passion. They want to hire people with that kind of passion. They want that passion to be immersed in the work they do for them. So, and they love working with inspiring artists, essentially. You know, there's a whole bunch of other crucial kind of business side stuff to this. You know, obviously there's a lot that an advertising photographer has to be able to deliver on, which goes beyond amazing photography.
Right.
But that's the starting point, and those are the people who are hiring.
You know, it's commonplace now, but this is, you know, new in the last 15 years. If I was hiring somebody to do anything, I would likely go look at their social media. I would look at their Instagram page. I would look at their Facebook page or whatever, because I want to get a sense of what's beyond the resume. Are the ad execs, are they trolling through people's personal web pages and their Instagrams to look at their photography?
Yeah, I think they are. The creatives in the ad world are definitely doing that, for sure. But once they find a photographer they like, then they're not going to rely on that feed in general to right. give them the confidence that person can actually deliver. So they will then go to the website to make sure that they're dealing with someone who has a bit of, there's a bit of proof there that they can deliver. There's a few other support aspects to their resume that people, you know, so they can know that they can do the job. So that's the sort of the process. I was at the Arles Photo Fest last year, and I was at a party and I bumped into the CD of a big ad agency in Paris. And he goes to Arles every year, which, as you and probably many of your listeners realize, is a very, you know, it's obviously one of the first photography festivals in the world, mm-hmm. and incredibly art focused, you know. But many of the ad agencies go down there. A lot of all the agents that can get there. It's the place to be seen. And they're all in the business world, but they're all looking for new photographers. And he told me he's looking to be inspired by interesting new work. And then from there, the next step for him is to see if that photographer has some kind of representation or agent, because he wants to know they're well resourced. That I want this photographer who makes this amazing work, but I want to make sure that they've got the team behind them that can deliver on that if I ask for it or something similar. So that's kind of the process, which means that my process makes absolute sense, because we want to start off by inspiring those people, and then we deal with the other stuff, you know.
Oh, very
and
cool.
And you tick the boxes.
Yeah. The, you know, I'm looking through your programs here, and I got to tell you, the boot camp is amazing. The boot camp looks like an absolutely thrilling program, and it's got a definite process to go through it. So starting with the blitz, when you move us through the boot camp, and because consulting could be, you know, send me a bunch of money, I'll tell you I like your work, go have fun. You are not that. you've got a really insightful package to deliver here. So start with what you call the blitz. Walk me through the steps.
Okay, so I won't work with photographers without blitzing their work, which is basically, like it says, I smash through a bunch of work, anything that's on the photographer's website, and identify their key brand and style. I call it their brand, but ultimately it's always the work that is the best work. And I'm not interested in knowing how it was used or what it was for. It's all about the image. The image must speak to me on its own. And it's if it's a good image, it, you know, it makes it into the sort of the heroes, if you like. So for me, that process is about really honing in on the photographer's best work. It's almost always the work they love doing. Mm-hmm. It's such a win-win. It's ridiculous, but it's so hard for artists to do this for themselves. And then when I have that work, I kind of analyze it a little, try and think about what the threads are that connect that work, what the feeling is it evokes, what that photography is saying to me. And we have a meeting and we kind of hash that out together until we've got this really lovely kind of idea of the photographer's brand, the look, the feel, the style, mm-hmm. what they care about, things like that. So that's the blitz. It's always a starting point. And then that informs everything. So the next step is getting the photographers onto making a personal project that has depth. And the reason for that is, as I've just said, and we've just talked about, you know, personal work is the work that inspires people in that world. And therefore, that is their biggest marketing asset. So, you know, make work you love making and you're going to, you know, be much more likely to get under the noses of the people who hire you. So the next step is to make the personal, come up with a personal project that has a little bit of depth, that relates to the blitz, so that's really on brand, but is saying something that the photographer cares about, that is, that is enough to make them want to keep going and back and shooting that project again and again because it means something to them, whether they're busy or whether they're broke.
I was going to ask why you define a long-term project as one of your starting points in your consulting.
So when I spoke to agents all around the world, and having been an agent, I mm-hmm. know that one of the biggest issues is getting personal work out of photographers. And yet personal work, as I've mentioned, is the biggest marketing tool. So basically, I realized that in order to have success at marketing, I needed to make sure that everyone doing my program was making work. And the reason I suggest an ongoing project is so that they have the, you know, so they have something always that they're making that's fresh, whatever their lives look like, whether they're busy shooting lots of work for clients or they don't have enough money because they're not busy. They need to be making work. And so the idea of this is to come up with a whole list of points around making a project that they can do regardless of the situation. So that's why I start there.
Okay. And then it goes on to define your dream clients. And you know, let's say one of my dream clients was Triumph Motorcycles, but I've never taken a motorcycle shot in my life. Are you going to pat me on the head and say, keep dreaming, you know, get real? Or is there a way to take a history that might be really good and put it in a new direction?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. So I have had photographers, oh my gosh, I've had this exact situation. There was a photographer whose work I blitzed once, and clearly he was very he wasn't technical at all, the opposite. He was all about people. He was about portraits. His best work was portraits and people, and, you know, he was more journalistic. And yet he was taking this bike into the studio and trying to photograph it, and he wasn't doing a very good job of it. I mean, this was years ago, years and years ago. I don't think the person would even remember, but it was so frustrating to me because I was saying to him, listen, you know, I know you love bikes, but just because you love bikes doesn't mean you have to photograph the bike. What about photographing the people who love bikes? What about photographing bikes in context with people who, adore their bikes, who go biking all the time, who show people, you know, cleaning their bikes, you know, fixing them. You know, mm-hmm. we all know that that's what motorbikes require. So just whatever aspect you have, you know, whatever approach you have, make sure that you're working in your zone of genius, not trying to do something. And this is the trying to do something you're not kind of scenario. And another great analogy of that is, just because you like eating doesn't mean you're going to be good at photographing food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that kind of approach. So it's taking the beauty about understanding, you know, what you do well. And it's, another aspect of it is your why, your purpose, and that's something else that I cover off. When you have that understanding of your approach to your art and to your work and to your life, quite frankly, you then can apply that to any personal project you make. And I'm running the program at the moment, and I've got a whole bunch of photographers who've figured out their purpose and their why and their style, and they're all, you know, working on their personal projects. And I have three people shooting sports series, but one is coming from a place of escape. So it's all about how people escape when they get into these sports moments, you know, when they're really focused. Another one is about respect. So it's all about this kind of respect that they have for the tools they use in their sport. And the other one is all about being in the flow and focus. Yeah. So you can see how three completely different photographers can approach the exact same subject, obviously in a different way, and how much more depth that brings into it. And it also feeds into their brand. So you can hear I get really excited about this stuff because I'm just passionate about it.
Well, Christina, you just used a phrase that I don't think I've heard before, and it's just completely captivated me. You said, you know, people working within their zone of genius instead of comfort zone. What's the difference?
I think sometimes it overlaps and it's the same, but it's knowing where you're making your best work. It's knowing it probably is some kind of comfort zone, but you and I both know that when you're in the flow and you're doing something that you're deeply immersed in and really enjoying it so much that you forget, time just flies by and you lose track of everything going on around you. And sometimes that can be quite challenging, that work, but it holds you. So I guess that's the difference, right? Mm-hmm. It's this idea of you're pushing yourself, but you're pushing yourself with such focus and purpose that the pain you don't feel the pain. I think that's the difference.
Let's take just a quick break. We hope very much that you are enjoying today's episode. The very fact that you are listening to this podcast suggests that photography means a lot to you. And if that's the case, you might want to have a look at Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. We truly believe that excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit readframes.com to find out more about our publication. And now, back to today's conversation.
I'm looking at your website. I'm looking at your program, and you've got stuff in here that I would expect about, you know, getting your website up to date and that kind of, you know, working on brand ID and stuff. But you've also got something in here. I'm really curious how you do this. And this is where you talk. This is week 7 in your program. You talk about busting down doors, and you say getting into the heads of key people so you never have to cold call. That seems impossible.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so tell me again. I mean, how do you get into the heads of the people you want to know you're out there?
So starting always with the work that you love making and sharing that is obviously the number one. That's your starting point. So chances are they might even find you that way if you're sharing work like that. Obviously, as you mentioned before, social media, getting the website looking good. And just to jump back one step, once you are making work you love making, once you know what you're about, identifying the people who will pay for that is really important.
Right.
So once you're identifying people who would likely align with the work you like making, then you're in a much easier area, you know? So, you know, it's not this massive, I just want to show everybody in the world my work. It's no, I want to focus on these people that I know will actually genuinely enjoy my work and appreciate it and might hire me. And then the marketing follows that. So the website is tweaked to suit those people. And then once that's looking good, the social media is aligned, then it's just a case of reaching out to those people. So everything sort of should be really super consistent. And, you know, there's so many ways to reach them these days, via social media, emails, you know, all print material, whatever you want to do. But the not cold calling thing for me is about building some kind of presence in that person's world before you pick up the phone, so that by the time you do pick up the phone, by the time you pick up the phone and call them and they pick up the phone, they know who you are. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So it's just so much less scary for the photographers to know that the person on the other side of the phone has received things from them, perhaps a card, perhaps an email, perhaps a DM on social media, perhaps they followed them. There's so many ways these days that you can touch base with someone before you sort of pick up the phone, and then it ceases to be a cold call because they know who you are.
Absolutely. Christina, I'm imagining the people out there listening to this. I'm thinking, you know, there's going to be people out there who've got long, very successful careers as, say, wedding photographers. And they're thinking, I just want to do something, if not more, I want to do something different. There are people out there who've got long careers as photojournalists. And they're thinking, you know, I want to say more about, you know, what's in my heart and soul versus what's going on in the streets, you know, in front of me. Who should call you? Just anybody looking for a sea change?
I work with people I know that can deliver to clients, because there's so many courses out there that teach people how to be photographers.
Right.
And that's not me. I need to know they can deliver. I need to know that they are capable of taking a brief and delivering on that brief. And a lot of professional photographers who've worked in the commercial world or worked in weddings even probably have those skills, you know, but it is about understanding the industry and the world that you're attempting to target. And one thing I see a lot is wedding and domestic photographers, who, by the way, I think some of the wedding photographers I've worked with who've moved into the advertising world are so good because of the training that wedding mm-hmm. photography gives you. Mm-hmm. But advertising photography is much more thought through. It's much more premeditated. You've got a trillion people getting involved in every, you know, shoot, every shot practically. And so it's a switch of approach, and it's a completely different audience. And I see wedding photographers, including weddings, on their site that they're promoting to people, you know, in the commercial world. And it's such a kind of, it's two different audiences. So I think it's really important as a starting point, even though this is not what you asked me, but I can't help myself, to know that you're dealing with two different markets, and to keep any website targeted at the market that you're actually trying to aim for. If you're going from weddings into commercial, it's absolutely possible. I've seen it work really successfully. One of my best friends is a photographer I worked with years ago, still work with her, and she was doing weddings and then moved into the commercial world. So it's really, really possible and achievable, but you have to understand the world you're moving into. And that's one of the things I think I do convey really well in my program is that world and how they think and what they need. So it is possible to move into those worlds, and it's possible for me to help them. But basically, I always assess anyone I work with. People can't just sign up to work with me. They have to book a call with me and have a chat. And, you know, then I can decide what the best next steps are.
You know, there is a parallel with what you're doing in the literary world, which is where I come from first. There are editors and there's acquisition editors and that kind of stuff. But there's also this field out there. They're called developmental editors. Some of them come out of agency work. Some of them come out of acquisitions. But they are there to say, well, okay, I'm going to take your ideas and your manuscript. We're going to have this conversation about where you want it. And I'm going to work with you to make the best version of your work targeted to where you want your dream to go. You've got all this experience as an agent, all this experience in advertising. It seems to me your advice, just as an editor, as a mentor, is going to be invaluable. You started something really cool called the Series Project. And I'm looking at it online right now. And just, you know, the very simple description, a photo series workshop focused on your visual voice. Well, I'm just going to stop right there because people understand that term differently. What do you mean by your visual voice?
So your visual voice is what I was talking about earlier, really. It's about being able to convey a strong emotion and evoke a feeling. That to me is your visual voice. It's the way you see the world. It's what you want to say about the world. It's all those things, you know, but it's unique to you. When you roll in things like what you care about, your purpose, your why, the things I mentioned earlier, all of those make it a very sort of unique voice, you know. So your visual voice is about taking that, but then with the Series Project, we take that visual voice, but we turn it into... We help photographers harness that to create personal projects that go one step further and have something very strong to say.
And it is not just pie in the sky stuff either. This has got a practical, you know, let's make this work for a client or whatever. I love this line you've got here. You say a personal series that delivers narrative, you didn't say images, that delivers narrative combined with a consistent personal aesthetic clearly demonstrates a photographer can shoot a campaign. Okay, what do you mean by narrative and what do you mean by consistent personal aesthetic?
So consistent personal aesthetic being very similar to the visual voice, it's your brand, right? So that's your mm-hmm. consistency. Narrative is about being able to use that to tell a story. So what I see a lot of photographers doing is making projects that starts from a place of, it starts from a visual place. So they'll walk down the street and photograph something, or they'll go to Cuba, for example, and they'll arrive in Cuba and photograph what they see. Now, there is a place for that, but when you think about it, thousands of photographers, millions of photographers have been to Cuba and arrived and photographed what they see. And you mm-hmm. often end up with quite similar stuff because what you see when you get there is only the surface of Cuba, right?
Right.
So to give an example, so we just went to Cuba earlier this year and we spent 5 weeks with those photographers helping them develop an idea. And I learned so much about Cuba, but basically we start intellectually, not visually. And that is really difficult for photographers to do. And yet it just gives them such brilliant results. So we start by researching the place in depth and we ask everyone to really look at what speaks to them about the place and to consider their why and to consider, you know, the way they see the world. And to go down as many rabbit holes as possible. And then from there, we help them identify the best ideas and figure out, well, okay, is that an idea or is that just a theme? So, you know, someone might want to talk about the cars in Cuba. Well, that's kind of a theme, but what do you want to say? And let's go further to the point where someone discovered that, you know, wanted to really get into the larders, which were all sent over by the Russians back in the 50s when they went communist. You know, it's the stuff you learn and you can dig into and get really specific about, it starts to form an idea. Then you can get a narrative from that. And then it's from there, once you have a strong idea and something you want to say, which can be very succinct, by the way, then you can start thinking about the images that you want to make to tell that story. And then there's so many other aspects to it. You know, storytelling can be told in multiple different ways. It can be linear, it can be circular. You can have a typology, you know. So there are so many ways to visually then tell that story, which way best works for that idea. And then on to the next thing, which is the final thing, which is how am I going to make it? What do I want it to look like? So you can see that all of that is such a lot to think about before you pick up the camera, but it can actually change what is essentially some travel snaps into something really compelling and engaging, and that prompts people to ask questions. And so they all arrived on the ground in Cuba. I like to say that when we do this, they sort of arrive as insiders, not outsiders. You know, they've already done all the work. They've done the digging. They've got this brilliant understanding of the place, and they're straight into their topic. And they've probably already lined up fixes. They know where they're going to shoot. They know some of the people they're going to see. And the weird thing about that process is that by creating that structure, magic happens. It creates, weirdly, more space for magic to happen because they're in the right place looking at the right thing. And it's very much like I was talking at the beginning, having that, listen to me, segueing right back circularly. But it just made me think of that because this idea of focus and knowing what you want to say is so important, because suddenly all the little things that relate to that topic start becoming obvious to you, because you're not trying to look at everything about Cuba. You're in there doing the thing, you know, with your topic. So it's amazing what comes up and the projects that photographers have made on that program.
And I mean, and we need to remind people that this is a structure that you provide, the series project. You say that a photographer can show up to this project really with no idea whatsoever, or just a vaguely formed idea, and you provide a process, you provide a structure, and a way to access what they don't have, you know, vocabulary for yet, into a marketable portfolio project that you can put in front of clients. And you say there's two ways to do it. You can do it online, and you can do it, you know, with a destination. 4 years ago, 40 international awards. That's not bad.
Yeah, we're over 50 now. The Cuba people just did so well, and they just keep coming in every day. So, it's definitely a proved process. So I should be really clear that my partner, the co-founder on this, Billy Plummer, who's a photographer based in Sydney, used to be the creative director of some of the top ad agencies in the world. Mm-hmm. And he's worked in London, China, and Australia, Bangkok, all over. So he is used to coming up with ideas. And it was his observation that photographers were struggling with the, you know, this idea making process. So he wanted to help. He's a Brit as well. We were in London at the same time, but we didn't actually meet until he did my bootcamp program. And so, we worked together on that. And then so a lot of the ideas in this process are his. And we like to think of the process as being a sort of your own creative department. And we actually encourage people to arrive with no idea whatsoever. We want people to come with blank canvas, totally blank brains. And yes, of course, if you're thinking things, fine. But that's how it works. And so he has this years of experience of having worked in advertising. And in advertising, they're taught how to come up with ideas as part of their job. So he uses a lot of those tools that advertisers, or rather creatives in the ad world, use to come up with ideas. So we give those to photographers. So the online one is just the same, really. And we did a very powerful one during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to be going to Cuba 3 years ago. We had to cancel at the last minute. And we were trying to think what we could do. And everyone was in lockdown, everyone. And I work with photographers all over the world on these things. So we created an online version which instead of going to a place to shoot, we just said, look, use something that you have access to. And it was the first one, they've all been really successful, but the first one I think was super powerful because everyone was in this state of uncertainty and all these photographers had kind of had their wings cut and they were feeling really vulnerable, really, you know, trapped. And all of those feelings were expressed and came out in the meetings that we were having every 2 days with these photographers. And the work that ensued was just gorgeous. And again, multi-award winning. But what we went through on that 3 weeks was pretty special. It was amazing, actually. I mean, and some of those photographers, they're all still in touch with each other. It's mm-hmm. incredible. Yeah, hard to explain, but really amazing.
And you've got a project coming up in Hanoi here in June 2024.
That's the next one. Yep. That's the next travel one.
Christina, you know, some of the most important people in my life have been the mentors, have been the coaches, the agents, that kind of stuff, the editors, the people who want me to succeed and see stuff in my work that I haven't been able to see myself. And you know, it strikes me that the service that you're offering, both in terms of aesthetics and practicality and structure, could be really, really the thing that a lot of photographers need to refill the tank, to recharge the battery, or even just to say, I don't even quite know who I am as a photographer. Give me some insight and let's see where it goes. This is remarkable stuff. Thank you very much. I have enjoyed this conversation. I'm tempted to sign up for Hanoi. I'd love to do that.
Well, yeah. So by the time this goes to air, I think you were talking about possibly January, but we will, yeah, there should still be, you know, hopefully it isn't full by then. So definitely reach out. And I'm always excited about everything I do because I love my job. I always say I've got the best job in the world for me.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed the conversation. Bye bye.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
Frames, because excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit us at www.readframes.com.